all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know on various issues of the day. Today, the debate is on the Bush plan on Social Security. And my guests will be, the first guest will be Rob Nickering, the Bush plan, and answering some very tough questions by myself and by you. And later on in the hour, we're going to have Barbara Cannelli. She's the president of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, giving you a very different view. And if you want to call in and ask questions, you're always welcome to do so. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can contribute to the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. Rob Nichols, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, thank you very much. We appreciate the programming today and taking some time to talk about the very important issue, and thank you very much for doing so.
Let me see if I can, first of all, distinguish between two, I guess, what I see as different things. You may not see as different things, and that's what I want to know.
Sure.
But the question on Social Security always seems to come down to two. One is the solvency of the program, whether it has enough money to last for the next 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And the other has to do with whether it should be privatized, whether it should be taken out of a system where we all sort of have social insurance and a guaranteed retirement, and two separate issues, or whether you think they're kind of one and the same.
Well, we look at them in one. So we take a half step back, Mark, and we look at them as the broad issue of retirement security and what we can do to ensure that younger Americans in their teens, in their 20s, in their 30s will have Social Security for them when they retire. So it's all part of one big issue, and I look forward to our time today to talk about the demography and the problem of Social Security that we have going into the future, and then the president's kind of architecture for reform as we look at fixing it.
But Rob, answer me this.
Sure.
Just want to get this straight. Isn't it possible that you could fix the solvency problems in Social Security without at all changing whether we go to privatization or not? I mean, it's been done in the past. It was done in 1983. And isn't it true that you could privatize Social Security and not fix the solvency problems?
Right. What the personal retirement accounts do, Mark, is provide younger workers with the option to do better than the benefits the current system has promised but can't deliver. So the debate over the personal retirement accounts, an important one, is part of the overall comprehensive reform of Social Security. So we are certainly not saying that establishing personal retirement accounts makes Social Security solvent in and of themselves. They do not.
Okay, so you can...
they do is allow younger workers to do better than what they would get today, which is a negative rate of return on their money. That's not something the president is not an outcome that he would like, and that's why he's put forward this idea that we're talking about today.
Okay, so just to be clear, you can privatize Social Security and it doesn't change the solvency problems that are there 40, 50 years from now.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that blanket statement. First of all, we're not privatizing Social Security. What we're doing, it will always be a government program. We've had it for 70 years. It's a program that it's the most successful social program, and it's simply one we want to see continue going forward another 70 or 100 years. And what we've seen, Mark, is some of the tinkering that Congress has done has put extended solvency a little bit, you know, a year or two here or there, but it hasn't created a permanent fix. So that's one of the kind of the architecture for reform. The president's put forward, you know, four key ideas, basic principles that would guide reform as we look at the demography and the basic arithmetic that we're facing. I'll just take a second on each.
Yeah, I'd very much like to get them, and
okay.
I promise I will get to them. I just want to just get my basic point down. And if you disagree, by all means, tell me you disagree. But in 1978, when George W. Bush ran for Congress, he thought that Social Security was going bankrupt in 10 years. And indeed, in 1983, there was a question about whether people would get their checks.
Right.
But we there was a bipartisan plan under Ronald Reagan and Democratic Congress, and it fixed Social Security for another 22 years to come,
right.
And it had nothing to do with privatization. So
right.
I just want to be clear that they're
correct.
Separate issues.
That's correct. But what they did is they thought that fix in 83 would extend solvency, you know, 75 years, and it didn't. So that's part of the problem is some of the temporary fixes that have been bipartisan, you're certainly correct there, such as, you know, raising the payroll tax, haven't permanently fixed the system. It's the demographics of the roughly 75 million baby boomers who are about to retire. That's what we need to face. So, but I would definitely say that, you know, we're looking for a thoughtful dialogue, and solvency is a key part of it, but we also are looking at a generational inequity where there are these younger workers who would pay in, if we don't do something, Mark, they would just pay in and get about 70% of what they're promised, and it's simply not, that's just not an outcome we'd like to see, which is why we're having this discussion today.
Okay, now if it does go on to 2042 and there are no changes until 2042,
right,
then workers still get more than the inflation adjusted rate, right? But they
right.
get less than what was promised.
Actually, let's take a half step back. The trustees report came out last week and updated those numbers. So they're slightly different than the ones you're stating. And that's when the Social Security cash flow peaks. So that's just a couple years away. It turns negative in 2017. That's 1 year earlier than previously projected. And then the trust fund is exhausted in 2041. So that moved up 1 year as well. So it is in that year where benefits, you are correct, go to about 70% of what is promised today.
Okay. Now, of course, this is what happened, I guess, in 78 to 83. They were negative, right? And, of course, I just want to make clear, I'm not saying privatization is right or wrong. I just want to make clear it's a
right.
different
well,
issue from solvency.
Privatization's not on the table. This will always be a government-run account. So that's why we say personal retirement accounts. No one wants to privatize Social Security. The part there was that younger workers would have the voluntary option. Again, it's voluntary. They could stay in the established system if they please. That's certainly their option. But they'd have the option to voluntarily put a slice of their payroll taxes into an account that would grow at a greater rate than the defined benefit system currently could pay them. But it's certainly always going to be a government program.
Well, let me ask you specifically about the program, because I'm not sure I understand all the ins and outs. One of the things, of course, that Social Security does is mm-hmm. it doesn't just pay you on retirement like an IRA or a 401k, but it also, if you get disabled,
right.
it pays you a lot more than you put in the system. We
right.
all sort of pay like insurance,
yep.
hoping that we don't get disabled. If you put your money in these personal accounts, that you would lessen the benefit you would receive if you're disabled?
Well, on the actual issue of the disabled, the board and that Congress is talking about today.
So how does it work?
We have yet to develop, specifically on the point of disabled, Mark, we have yet to develop a specific proposal. So we're talking to Congress about that, but I can't share with you specifics on the disabled question. They just simply don't exist at this point, other than to say, you know, the president has said, you know, we're going to take care of those who are disabled, period, and I'll work forward with Congress on the specifics on that.
Okay, well,
but they just don't exist at this moment.
Now tell me this. Do you have full property rights in these personal accounts? Do you have full control over them? If you put your money in a personal account, for example, if I put my money in a 401k or an IRA,
right.
I have pretty much control over where it goes.
Oh, I see what you're saying. The idea that we have put forward, and it, the direct answer to your question is not precisely knowable right now, in that we're working with Congress on the idea, but the way we envision it before it goes through the legislative process would be that you would have three or four or five options, just like the federal employees have. It would be modeled similarly to the thrift savings plan. So you'd have three or four or five options to pick from. You would not be able to pick a specific stock. These would be index funds, like municipal bond index funds and stock index funds. And you would put your money, you would divert part of your payroll taxes into one of those options. That's the concept that we're talking about here.
Now, of course, Social Security has a lot of things that it has to do in addition to disability. There's something that we insiders know as the legacy debt. Basically, I'm sure you know this, Rob. I'll explain to my listeners. During the Great Depression, when Social Security was started, we had to pay benefits to seniors right away because people were in a lot of danger
right.
in the 20s. And that means that basically today's generation pays for seniors from previous generations, and that means that when you put away money for Social Security, it cannot earn the same amount as it would in the market because you have to pay to previous seniors. If you don't do that, then suddenly seniors are cut off. Would the personal accounts be reduced to pay for this legacy debt?
Now, that's a very thoughtful question, another one we're having with Congress right now. Again, we have just put forward the proposal, the idea that these personal retirement accounts, you know, should be available as an option for younger workers. But there's not yet final legislation, so it's hard to say precisely at this moment, you know, what the final outcome would be.
Is there any specific legislation on the floor that Bush has proposed as a starting point? Or?
No, we put forward the four basic principles to guide the reform.
And
again,
they are?
But you touched on something extremely important, and that is we're trying to start this. We just want a thoughtful, bipartisan dialogue and discussion just on the facts. Let's start with the facts, and that is the pay as you go part, Mark, that you touched on is extremely important, and I'm delighted you did it, because those are just the simple facts that it's a system that can only pay out in benefits as much as is coming in revenues. And that system worked wonderfully well 70 years ago when there were 40 workers for every retiree. In the 50s, roughly, there were 15 or 16. Currently, there's three workers for every beneficiary, and soon it'll be two. And that's where it's that demography, that basic arithmetic that we're facing. We have some time to deal with it, and that's why we think it's the right thing to do to have this discussion now. President Clinton, I give a lot of credit to, roughly 7 or 8 years ago in 97, called Social Security a looming crisis, and I think that phrase was probably an accurate one. I applaud him for, you know, starting to raise awareness of the issue, and we're doing the same thing here and trying to come up with a thoughtful understanding of what the facts are, and then start looking at what are the options for reform. And ours does include, again, no changes for anyone born before 1950. So if you're 55 or older, you're nearing retirement, or you have retired, there'll be no changes in the way you receive Social Security. You would not be eligible for a voluntary personal account. You know, the president also, as we touched on earlier, Mark, does want to fix Social Security permanently. So he does not want a temporary fix that gives you 5 or 10 years of additional solvency before it goes bankrupt. He's looking for something else. And the third part certainly is he's not seeking an increase in the payroll tax rate, in that we think that would have a harmful impact on the economy, particularly on small business owners, small business women and men and entrepreneurs who have to pay that payroll tax. Many studies will tell you that they'll be less likely to hire, you know, if those payroll taxes keep going up. So we don't want to do something that would harm our economy's overall economic health.
Let me ask you this. I remember the debates actually between Bush and Gore in 2000, and I remember that Al Gore's plan to resolve some of the problems with Social Security solvency some years from now was something he called Social Security Plus. In other words, he wanted to leave Social Security alone and then, in addition, help us with more 401k, more IRA plans, which seems to give all the personal accounts that George Bush wants, but at the same time gives us the guarantee that we have in retirement that we're going to get a certain amount of retirement. I saw a recent study by Standard & Poor's that said that if people retired in 2000 based on the stock market, they'd have more than twice the amount of retirement income as if they retired in 2002. And so I guess I wonder, when our 401ks and our IRAs go up and down with the market, shouldn't we diversify and have a more guaranteed solid thing so that if we happen to retire in a down market, we don't, you know, lose half our income?
Super question. As the concept that we put forward would include something that's called lifestyle investing, so that when you're younger, more of the assets that you would divert into this personal retirement account would be in stock index funds, for example. And then as you grew older, that balance, that ratio would change into more fixed income and bonds, things that are traditionally safer and more secure. And then lastly, Mark, the proposal that we put forward would state that when you are 47 years of age, so you're 15 years away from 62, which is the early retirement option. Anyway, when you're 47 years of age, you're automatically put into one of these lifestyle funds that moves the majority of your assets into fixed income, into bonds, so that you could not be negatively impacted by retiring on a down year.
Rob, I know you don't have much time with us. I'd like to take just one quick call, though, before you leave us. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Rob Nichols. Caller, are you there?
This is Alice from Humboldt County.
Hello, Alice. How are you?
Hi, Alice. Good afternoon.
Okay.
Do you have a question for...
Are you aware that Roosevelt got us Social Security without a single Republican vote, that they, the Republicans, have considered it socialism, and most have always wanted it gone.
Alice, do you remember that, when Franklin Roosevelt got Social Security?
Yeah.
I suspect you were
91.
Around then.
I'm 91.
And you were around then, okay?
Yes.
So what's your question? Is what's your belief, Alice?
Oh, I want to see Social Security stay.
Okay, Rob?
For my grandchildren and
great-grandchildren. Well, Alice, I couldn't agree with you more, Alice. Number one, again, this is just Social Security is our most important social program the federal government has ever put together. I absolutely share your view. We want to strengthen and secure it for your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, and that's why we think this bipartisan debate and this reform effort that the president has put forward to strengthen it is so important. If we don't change it at all, if we make no changes to it, those who are in their teens and their 20s and their 30s are going to see benefit cuts, and it's just not an outcome that we'd like, and which is why we're talking about it and trying to put it on a permanent, sustainable basis.
Let me ask you one last question,
sure.
Rob, and then I know you've got to go. And that is, do you think that once we have these personal accounts, if they're needed to fix the solvency in the system, the government can take from those personal accounts and use it to fix the solvency of the system?
The point, as we, again, in our concept, and we're in this discussion with Congress, so it's hard to say what the precise final outcome would be. That said, these voluntary personal accounts, the government could not touch them. They would be your own money, and then the government would not be able to tap into them. That's the concept that we've put forward.
Alice, I want to thank you very much for your call. I guess I will ask one quick question,
sure.
Rob. What's the cost of all this? How much does it add to the deficit?
We of course, there's not a true cost. It's like prepaying your mortgage. There are already set costs that are out there. We've already promised these benefits. So we're not talking new money, but like prepaying your mortgage, we're talking about more money up front. We believe the transition to the voluntary personal accounts would require about $750 billion in transition financing over roughly a 10-year window. But again, there's no cost because we're not talking about any new money. It's like prepaying your mortgage. These are already costs that we've agreed to make, that we've agreed to pay, and that we've promised to pay. We would just be putting them up front on the balance sheet.
Well, Rob, if I had my way, I'd have you on the whole hour, but I know you're busy.
We'll
and
do
I
it again. We'll come
I
in again.
I promised your spokesperson I'd keep you down to 15 minutes, and I already went a minute or two over. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Very much for
have
coming on
day.
There. We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, I will have my next guest. Her name is Barbara Cannelli. She is the Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and you'll also hear my comments on my discussion with Rob Nichols. And, of course, you are welcome to comment as well. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 757-SCOOP, or you can write in on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be right back with more of this discussion right after this.
Now 94 years young, the ethical treatment of animals has been her life's work. Anna Briggs feels that each dog at the Briggs Animal Adoption Center in Charlestown, West Virginia, from scruffy mutt to sleek purebred, deserves a loving home. All have been spayed or neutered and current with their shots and vaccinations. Plus, the majority of dogs have completed basic obedience training. You can find photos and bios of the dogs at the Briggs Adoption Center website. www.baacs.org. That's baacs.org. You'll be doing something very nice for the pet you adopt, and it doesn't take long for you to add to your quality of life. The Briggs Animal Adoption Center is an affiliate of the National Humane Education Society. For more information, call 304-724-6558 or visit their website, www.baacs.org.
Magellan? No. Well, who knows what Magellan did?
Sail around the world.
Right. Now.
Sometimes, a child who doesn't seem interested is really a child with a speech or hearing problem.
Blackbeard? Who said Blackbeard? And what did Blackbeard do? He was
a pirate.
Time and again, it's been shown that a young student's ability to read and learn begins with speech and language and hearing skills.
Jamie? Are you with us? Who can tell us?
He wanted to go to India.
Many communication disorders can be detected early and corrected, so learning and literacy skills can develop normally. Make sure your child has the speech, language, and hearing abilities to keep up in class. For more information, visit ASHA.org, a public service message from the American Speech Language Hearing Association and this station.
A new route to
Asia!
Good.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I want to thank particularly those listeners who are tuning in on Channel 10 in Fairfax County. I know you're watching radio on TV, which is kind of a new concept, but this way, hey, you can go and do other things and just listen in with your TV on. I hope I can get some of you to call in as well. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. The topic is Social Security, and I just had as my guest in the first 15 minutes, that's all he'd give me, though I appreciate that time, Rob Nichols. He's an administration spokesman. He's the Assistant Secretary of Public Affairs for the U.S. Department of Treasury. And I really tried to cover a lot in that 15 minutes. And I want to talk in detail about what we discussed and sort of my take on it. To me, the brief take on it is, did you notice how much of the plan is undecided? George Bush isn't proposing a detailed plan. I saw a commercial just the other day, again and again, repeat on the air. What have the Democrats proposed for Social Security? Nothing. Well, Bush hasn't proposed anything for Social Security because to answer those tough questions would show that his plan is unworkable, which is why Rob very nicely pointed out that, oh, they haven't worked out this. They haven't worked out disability. They haven't worked out the legacy debt. They haven't worked out a lot of these issues because they really do cause problems. And as my caller, Alice, who is 91 years old, pointed out, she remembers when Franklin Delano Roosevelt started Social Security back in the 30s. God bless you, Alice. Of course, ever since that time, we have had people try to dismantle it, from Alf Landon in 1936 to Barry Goldwater to Ronald Reagan to George W. Bush. I want to invite, though, as my next guest, a woman who, by all means, does not support the administration plan. She is Barbara Cannelli. She is the president of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and I want to thank her very much for taking the time to come on the program. Barbara, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, thank you. I listened to the previous exchange, and you did a terrific job.
Well, thank you. What did you take out of that exchange?
Well, what I took out of it was there was a lot of unanswered questions. It is so interesting to me that the president ran for president twice, in 2000 and 2004, and he was so short on details about how he was going to privatize Social Security. Now I hear one of his deputies at the Treasury Department not coming up with much more than we were told previously, and yet I remember it was the Thursday after the Tuesday the president was elected. He said his number one priority was privatizing Social Security. His State of the Union message was privatizing Social Security. And yet we still don't have any answers to the questions that you asked.
He kind of reminds me of somebody who would open a trap door to a deep pit and say, Democrats, please step forward and give us your plan.
Well,
you know, please walk forward and explain your plan.
I thought I was bad.
Well, you know, I mean, he's like saying, please, please, we need you to step forward. But what's interesting is that he's not stepping forward himself. He does give you the 30-second pitch, but one of the reasons why we have this program is it doesn't even withstand a 15-minute pitch, because what's he going to do about disability? What's he going to do about legacy? Here's my view, Barbara, and let me see if you agree with it. My view is, here's what he plans to do. He plans to saddle original Social Security, if you will, with all the things like disability and legacy and all the things that keep the system going, and then basically separate out the personal accounts and thus artificially make them seem like they're earning more. In other words, the whole point of Social Security, obviously, is it's an insurance plan. If you are disabled, or if you live to be 95 years old, or if you, frankly, die early and your children are minors, you get money from people who died at 70 and therefore don't need the funds anymore. And, you know, their children are in their 40s and doing fine. But this takes away from the social part of Social Security. Basically says, hey, well, you're on your own. And it seems to be like he's saying, oh, no, you won't be on your own. There'll be the money there, but at the same time, you don't have to put the money there. And I don't know, it just doesn't seem to add up to me.
Well, you're absolutely right, because privatization isn't a plan to save Social Security at all. It has nothing to do with saving Social Security. It's a plan to dismantle Social Security, and I think, Larry, you've caught on to that. If your audience takes nothing away from this program, it will say that Social Security privatization does nothing about the solvency program. Now, the whole point of why we're talking about this is, you know, the demographics. People are living longer. But the plan that the president is putting on the table, Mark, is just totally different than what we've got right now. And what it is it's a philosophical debate that's going on. The president, he ran for Congress in 1978. He said he was for privatizing Social Security. We don't know why he said that then. I have no idea. But when he ran in 2000, Social Security is a very particular program, and it's a social insurance program.
And I guess that's why I kept pressing hard the question of solvency versus privatization. They're two separate issues. You can fix the solvency problem without touching privatization. You have separate issues, but it was very hard. Let me go to the phones if I could. If you want to call in, by the way, folks, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. I assure you, Barbara Cannelli has been in this field for decades. Is that fair to say?
Well, Mark, let me tell your audience. I went to Congress in 1982, and I was leaving four young kids, and I was going to Washington, and I figured I'm going to make it worth my while. And so I got on the Ways and Means Committee, which is a very important committee. Little did I know that they were going to have the whole issue of Social Security in front of them. Really, if you want a crisis, I'll tell you about a crisis. That was in 1983. They didn't know if the checks could go out for the rest of the year, and we don't have a crisis now. Right now, we have a long-term gap for money for Social Security. So, you know, I've been the importance of Social Security. They understand the accidents and vicissitudes of life. You know, I don't know, you know, God love him, but he seems to think older people are selfish, and if they're taking care of everybody. My members understand the value of Social Security, not only for themselves, but for their children and their grandchildren.
And it strikes me that here he's taking a possible problem 40 years from now, and these long-term projections are notorious.
From a totally different situation. During the Clinton years, for the first time, we built up, in a long time, we built up a surplus. And what the president was saying, you know, before we spend any more money, before we give any more tax Social Security,
despite the budget surplus of Social Security, he extended the deadline from 2027 to 2042. So obviously he did a good job with that. Let me go to the callers. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. You can also post a comment on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Barbara Cannelli.
Yes, and it's your California fan club, Mark and Barbara. I think I can give you an accurate quote from Rush Limbaugh recently on his program. He says, Franklin Roosevelt is long dead. Some of his policies still live on, but we are in the process of doing something about that, too. That's almost a verbatim quote from Rush Limbaugh.
What's interesting is they talk that way to each other, but rarely in public to a bipartisan audience. But go ahead, Dave.
But I am a person who has very, very little faith in our present government. I'm sure you're aware of that, Mark.
And I am.
It would be so out of character if this was the first time that they're concerned about anything other than the billionaire class. If they're actually concerned about doing something for the average person, the working poor, this will be a startling exception to everything else that this administration has done. I think they want to end Social Security under whatever pretext they can. My guess.
It's a strong point. Do you have a question for our guest?
A comment on that. I'd like to hear it. That's just if you've got a thought on what.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. As I said earlier, this is a philosophical debate that's going on. It's much more than an economic debate that's going on. There are those that do not believe that we should all, you know, act as a community. Social Security is a community-type program. It's a social insurance kind of program. We all pay in, and we all get the benefits. But I'll give you an example. I'm a widow, and my husband died at 64. He worked all his life. He put himself through college and through law school. He died at 64. He never collected a penny in Social Security. But my mother, she married my father, never worked after she got married, and my father died at 70, and she lived to 93 years old. She collected Social Security. So it's a social insurance program, and I'm awfully glad, Mark, that you mentioned about the disability situation. That's not talked about enough. You know, you can be driving home from work in the late afternoon, and you could have two kids waiting for you to come home and your wife, and you have an accident. You become disabled. You're covered by Social Security. Your children are covered by Social Security. This is an insurance program. You talk about these personal accounts or privatized accounts, and the market goes up and the market goes down. When that gentleman that you had on before tells you that you're going to make more money, that it's going to be there more than it is for Social Security, how does he know that? How does he know that?
He should make a fortune
in the market. I mean, we know, and we've all lived long enough to see the market go up and the market go down, and all of us, I think many of your listeners are in the market, and fine, we're happy for them. But there should be a basic security that people have, and that's called Social Security.
You know, it reminds me of, and I'm actually too young to remember the old game show, You Bet Your Life, but it seems to me that part of the joy of people who went on that game show was that they really weren't betting their life. They really knew if they won, terrific, but if they lost, they really weren't going to lose their life. It's striking to me that the same, sometimes social conservatives, that will say to somebody who goes to Las Vegas, you know, go ahead and bet your excess income, but don't bet your life savings, will say in terms of Social Security, no, we want you to put your entire life savings in the same market. I love 401ks, I love IRAs, but I love the fact that if they fail for me, I still have Social Security as a backup. Thank you very much, Dave. Let me thank you for your call.
If I could,
yeah, make one more comment. Logic. Yeah, go ahead.
If you're rich and you want to buy a retirement plan, you just go out and buy a retirement plan. If you're working for minimum wage, how much are you going to be able to set aside in investments?
That's a strong point. It's a strong point. And I'm going to give Barbara a chance to comment on that after the break. Dave, thank you very much for your call. We're going to go to another commercial break. And if you want to call in, this is a great time to discuss the plan. Ask your questions. Barbara and I will try to do our best to describe what the plan is. It's hard to tell because, as you heard from Rob Nichols, they don't know the specifics themselves. If you disagree, if you love the Bush plan, call in and tell us why. Toll-free number, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
But did you know that it's the number one killer of women nationwide? Some of these women may have it and not even know it. Heart disease claims more lives each year than breast cancer, lung cancer, or strokes combined. But there are steps you can take to protect yourself against it. While not smoking, daily exercise, and a nutritious diet are good for your health, they're critical in the fight against heart disease. Most important, get regular checkups and ask your doctor about risk factors, especially if you're over 40, when the risk of heart disease increases dramatically. For more information on how you can prevent heart disease, contact your local American Heart Association or visit their website at www.americanheart.org. It's never too late to protect your heart health. Start now.
Visit Epson.com/promotions.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
As time flows on, there are places we return to again and again. Precious places. Timeless places. Places that, with your help, can endure forever. I'm Paul Newman. Help the Nature Conservancy save the last great places around the world.
Yeah, Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, with former Congresswoman Barbara Kennelly. She is now the president of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicine and Medicare. Excuse me. Medicine would be nice to preserve as well. In fact, Medicare would be nice to preserve as well. One of the things that surprises me is, as I'm looking at the figures, and again, please correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like if you had to compare the two programs, Medicare faces a much more serious crisis than Social Security right now. The figures I've seen show that in the next 10 years, its cost will triple before Social Security's cost even doubles. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and the trustee report came out last week, and I tried to, you know, make this emphasis that the real problem is with Medicare. And, in fact, all this talk about Social Security going into the red, Medicare started to go into the red last year.
It's already in the red.
It's in the red, exactly. And Social Security has more money coming in than going out to 2017. So, I mean, I'm not saying that we shouldn't address this fact. I think we should. You do it earlier. But Medicare is the real problem. And really, what bothers me, Mark, is that they passed legislation last year and first prescription drug help, and not only doesn't give much help for prescription drug costs, but when you see what's going to happen with this Medicare new proposal when it goes into effect in 2006, you're going to see the deductions, the premiums, everything going up. So I think that gentleman that called in, David, I think it was, who called in before, he's absolutely right. This Social Security debate is a bit of a distraction from some of the things we really should be doing.
The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. Barbara, why do you think it is that the president is focusing on Social Security, which might have a problem in 2042, although, frankly, if you take the figures that he promises for the great economy from his tax cuts, there's no problem at all, interestingly enough. The president's own numbers contradict himself. But why is he focusing on Social Security rather than Medicare, which, as you point out, is already in the red?
Well, you know, I hear this question all the time when I go out and do town hall meetings. And people say, well, why is he doing this? His program works. Why is he doing this? And I think what has happened is, for years, I mean, this is nothing new. When Social Security came into being in 1940, there were those that said, you know, it's a socialized kind of program. When Barry Goldwater ran, they said, you know, we shouldn't have Social Security. And really, right-wingers, conservatives, Rush Limbaugh-type people have been against Social Security. Now, right now, who's in charge? The president is a conservative. He is the president of the United States. We have a Republican House and Senate. And there are these people in this town, and I'm in Washington, D.C., the Cato Foundation, the Heritage Foundation, for years said we shouldn't have a Social Security system, that it was a redistribution of wealth. And these people have been against Social Security for years. Now the president really is very close to these conservatives, and if he's ever a time to get rid of Social Security with the conservatives in charge, this is the time.
So it sounds like
and
there is urgency.
And you know, the whole point is, I wish he would just drop it, you know. But he seems to, like, he's like a dog with a bone. He's onto it, you know.
I think you raise a good point. There is an urgency with Social Security. The urgency is the Republicans may not always control the presidency, the House, then the Senate, and the Supreme Court, and so they may not be able to dismantle the system 5, 10, 20 years
That's
from
it.
Now,
yeah.
So they gotta act now.
Well, the greatest threat to Social Security is that for the first time in the United States of America, we have a president who wants to dismantle it. So, I mean, we really have a threat here, and this is why I never will let up about talking about this, because this is serious. You know, the president has a megaphone. I mean, he's got a lot of power, and he wants this very, very badly, even though it would not be good for the future of the United States of America.
And one thing he's doing is actually using the Social Security Administration, which it used to be a nonpartisan, basically civil servant type job where you basically tell the truth to people. I noticed when I got my little green form in the mail this year that for the first time they told me that my benefits were not guaranteed. Now, I've seen, you know, every time they say, yes, your benefits will be there. In fact, the law requires that your benefits are there. And what's striking to me is this. Here we have an administration saying that even though the law says that you got to pay the Social Security benefits, and frankly, in 2042, if we ran out, what would we do? We could borrow, just like we borrowed to pay for the war in Iraq. We could borrow to finance Social Security. But the law requires, correct me if I'm wrong, Barbara, the
You're
law requires
right.
these
right.
benefits be paid.
Yeah.
So the president is saying this. Here's what he's saying. He's saying pay your Social Security. And then I asked Rob Nichols, I said, well, what about these personal accounts? I said, you know, are those guarantees? Oh, yes, absolutely. Those are guarantees. guarantees. We won't touch those. Well, if Congress can change a law to stop paying you Social Security, Congress can pass a law to confiscate the personal accounts just as well.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And to say that those bonds, with the full faith and credit of the United States behind them, were worthless. Now, you know, some of these people that are talking about getting rid of Social Security say, well, those are only paper. There's only IOUs. They are exactly Treasury bonds. The best investment you can have is a real problem. It really is. And that's what we should be concentrating on, not the dismantling of Social Security.
Well, I just know that during the American Revolution and also during the Civil War, people were afraid that the government would not come through on its debts. It came through back in those very much tougher times than we have today. What George Bush, he kind of reminds me, frankly, of a mafia guy that says, you know what, if you don't pay me, I may not give you protection. And you say to him, well, I didn't know I needed protection. He said, oh, you need protection, all right. You need protection. And if you don't pay me, you're not going to get that protection. And you're thinking, what do I need protection from? What George Bush is saying, he's the first president to say that the law that requires the government pay Social Security may be repealed. I hear this. I tell you, I go out. I know you do, Barbara. I go out. I speak before a lot of high school kids. It's part of my job. I debate the Bush administration, 17, 18-year-olds, and they say, well, I'm afraid the money just won't be there. And I say, well, the law requires it to be there. And they say, well, what if Congress changes the law? And I say, well, I guarantee you, as long as you have a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress, Congress won't change the law. The only threat to Social Security is George Bush.
Yes, and you know, Mark, I don't have to say much because you're way ahead of me.
Well, no.
But you know, let's talk about Social Security for a minute. Let's just think about what we're talking about, and you got to remember, it's the largest single source of income for retirees today.
Still, the largest.
Without Social Security, half of those over 65 would be living in poverty. It's portable. You can take it from job to job. You don't have to even sign any papers. It's progressive because you get a return on a higher percentage of your pre-retirement income when you're low income. And you know, we just talked about the disability. And protected by from inflation. And the best thing is, and I'm a woman, and you know, I have a lot of woman friends, and we women live forever, and we will outlive our savings, there's no doubt about it. So it's got all these pluses, and the idea that all of a sudden, in this year, that we're going to decide we don't need it anymore, all these things stay the same. Guess what? You get old. You don't have a paycheck anymore. You can have an accident. You can be disabled. All these things will continue to happen. So why? I don't know. I can't figure it out why we're debating this constantly when we have so many other things that we should be debating. I mean, we're in a war. I mean, there's so many things that we should be looking at. Our homeland security isn't secure. So I just think he made a promise to someone, he got convinced of something. You know, our president is very determined, and he just won't let this thing go. But I will tell you something. When I get heartened when I go out, because I see audience after audience sitting there saying, this program is a good program. A country like America should have income security and take care of our people when they're disabled, and when somebody, the breadwinner, dies, take care of the children. We understand that. And so I think the hope, and I'm glad you're having this program, but the hope for our country is the people out there who understand we should have Social Security. The only thing that's going to win this battle, people don't have the power the president has or the Congress has, but the people have power, and you're having this program, me going out talking to audiences. I think the people understand it, and I think that's the only thing that's going to save us.
I'll tell you a story. I was here in Northern Virginia. I was going to actually look to buy tile for my floor, and I there was a woman there. She asked me what I did for a living. I told her about my radio show. She asked me my politics, and I said I was a Democrat, and she looked at me askance and said that she's a very conservative Republican. I said, well, you know, that's okay. Yeah, you know, we're all different in America. And she said, yeah, I don't agree with the Democrats on anything except – well, you like Social Security, don't you? And I said, yes, I do like Social Security. He said, on that one, I have to agree with you folks. And so it's just interesting to me that here we have a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, but she was with us on Social Security.
But, Mark, I think the older citizen, the older individual has to protect this program because, I mean, I don't know how old are you, Mark?
I'm in my 30s.
You're in your 30s. Well, I've got four children in their 30s. But, you know, when you're young, you're not worried about Social Security. I certainly didn't. You're thinking about, you know, about paying your student loan. You're thinking about if you're married, maybe buying a house. You've got all sorts of things on your mind. So when they say, you know, young people have been told millions of dollars have been spent to tell young people it won't be there, but it's up to the older citizen who understands what happens in life, understands that accidents happen in life, to protect the system. I don't expect my children to understand what, you know, first of all, when you're young, you think you'll never get old. And then if you get old, you'll be lucky. You'll be one of the ones that, you know, made some money. So it's really up to the older generation to protect the system. It's taking care of them, and it will take care of their children. But, you know, this is not going to be easy.
I need to take one more break. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can contribute to the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. And when we get money in one of these personal accounts. We'll be right back with that right after this.
Federal student loans. It's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan.
Forced to libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
At the gateways to cities and towns across the globe, a familiar gear wheel signals. Rotary is here. Living their motto of service above self, more than a million Rotarian men and women worldwide support humanitarian work in your community and our world community. Service to youth, to the elderly, to the disabled, and the disadvantaged. In every corner of the globe, Rotary means friendship and helping others.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine. I cut the commercials just a little short because it's a very important discussion that we're having today. It's the question of the Bush plan on Social Security. If you missed the first 15 minutes, hey, go to the blog. Don't miss my interview with Rob Nichols. He's an administration spokesperson trying to talk about the Bush plan for Social Security, and what was is how few questions he could answer. The answer is Bush hasn't given us a detailed plan on Social Security. He's kind of opening the trap door and asking the Democrats to walk through. And since that time, I've had as my guest Barbara Cannelli. She's a former congresswoman of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and we've been talking about the various problems with the Bush plan. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can contribute to the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. And one of the comments we have on the blog, Barbara, is a question of whether the Bush plan would end up shifting wealth from the poor and working classes to some very rich people. Would it do that?
Well, you're talking about if you had personal accounts or private accounts and they went into Wall Street, I know that your previous guest was saying that, you know, that wouldn't make any difference. Of course, that you pay for it. We don't pay for that when you're in Social Security. But, I just want to say something, Mark.
Go ahead.
The gentleman who was before me, he talked about the pluses of personal accounts. And what you've got to remember is, and this is why I caution young people buying into this thing, we're in a terrible deficit situation right now. So you have to borrow money to set up these personal accounts because Social Security is a pay-as-you-go program. You know, people who are working now pay for today's retirees. And to say, for the president to say those 55 and under won't be hurt, you've got to borrow trillions of dollars. So young people will pay not only once, but twice. They'll pay to put in their own account, the 6% into their own account, and then they have to pay back that borrowing. You know, that just doesn't disappear. So this is a very expensive program we're talking about, and it gets even more expensive when you're in a deficit situation.
And frankly, that leads nicely to the point I promised before the break. I went out and I took out my Excel spreadsheet, as I'm wont to do when I have sort of a mathematical question, and I did the research. I tried to figure out the cost of the government borrowing this kind of thing, and really the cost to you. And so what I did is I looked and I saw what 30-year bonds were. Mm-hmm. We don't have 50-year bonds, but 30-year bonds are at about 5%. And so what I did is I said, well, if you're 20 years old and you put away $1,000 a year in this personal account every year until you're 70, and of course that earns 5%, because the government has to borrow it. In order for you to put that $1,000 away, the government has to borrow. It's an additional money. As you point out, Barbara, you have to continue paying seniors. At least Bush has promised that he would. And so you've got to borrow. So this isn't really your money in that $1,000. This is money that the government is borrowing from China and Saudi Arabia and some of those other countries. Well, we can't pay them back at 2 or 3% as we can pay Americans back. We have to pay them back the rate of our treasury bond, this 30-year bond. So it's at 5%. And so what I realized is that if you put this $1,000 a year that the government has to borrow to finance it, you're going to lose $220,000 in Social Security by the time you're 70. And what's interesting is that most of it's on the front end. Let's say Bush tries these personal accounts for 10 years and then needs the money to pay for another war or to pay for, frankly, his current tax cuts. You've lost $100,000 right there. That because when you agree to the personal accounts, you're doing what Rob Nichols said, you're prepaying. You actually give up the right to receive it in Social Security. And I would have to think if you lose a couple $100,000 in retirement, that if you're disabled, well, you would lose probably the $2 million or whatever you would get in disability payments over your life as well.
Well, first of all, remember what was the answer to the question when you asked about the disabled. He said, well,
we don't know yet.
We don't know yet. Well, the commission, President Bush appointed a commission of 16 people 2 years ago, and they couldn't figure that out, because if you're putting money in the market and you're trying to figure out how you can grow that money, you've got to, keep putting money in. What you put in is what you're going to get out. So they haven't even thought about the disabled. And he said, well, we'll figure it out. I don't think you can with personal accounts. But let me tell you something, Mark. The best estimates I've seen for the future is $5 trillion over 20 years to bring this program in personal accounts into being. $5 trillion, we don't even know what $5 trillion is. It's so much money. But, once again, I'll end on how I began. Why we are thinking about this is beyond me. But I think it's the idea that, conservatives have, that we all should be on our own. And everybody should do well. Well, guess what? The accident vicissitudes of life, everybody doesn't do well. But even if you do well, you can have a business that goes broke, or you can have a kid that's sick. And, there's nothing like that Social Security that's there. Because remember, and this is what I get annoyed at people, that's our money. Out of every paycheck you get, you the FICA tax comes out. That's our money. This isn't a charity. This isn't welfare. This is our money. And we want to choose and have chosen for the last 70 years to have a Social Security system. Why all of a sudden we're saying we don't need it? I think we need it just like we've always needed it.
People, money managers will tell you to diversify, to not put all your money in the stock market, for example, to know that you have some guaranteed income. And what's interesting to me is that in the past, we had more stable jobs. We had more stable incomes. We had pensions, more health care, less income variability, more job stability. Frankly, I think we need Social Security now even more than we did 20, 30 years ago, because it's the only sure thing we've got, it seems.
Well, Mark, you're right on the subject, because I remember when I worked at Social Security, I was so sick of talking about the three-legged stool, and it's pensions, savings, and Social Security. Well, pensions hardly are there anymore. The defined pension system is disappeared. It's a 401k. And savings, I hate to tell you, we're a country of consumers. So what's left? Social Security is left, and thank heavens.
I have to tell you, people who support the Bush plan remind me of the people who are very proud of the fact that they haven't paid their fire insurance, because they say, hey, I saved, $200 every single year I save in premiums. I make more than you. If there's a fire, well, then we'll have to work that out in the future. we'll have to provide
Mark,
for that.
Mark, keep talking because you're really doing a good job.
I got to tell you, I'm actually going to be on a panel. I'm going to a world conference in Colorado. I'm going to be on a panel with Molly Ivins and some guy
from the Heritage
Foundation on Social Security. So this is good practice for me.
Oh, listen, and you're doing a wonderful job, and just keep it up because, you know, people don't understand that the things do happen. And, you know, our young people, we've got to take care of them, so we can't let this happen.
So let me just ask you this. In terms of a fix, is the answer really that this is not the most serious problem and we can just
wait? Well, no. I told you when I was on the Ways and Means Committee in 83, we solved a good deal of the problem, but we left that long-term gap out there at 2042. And if we did nothing, and certainly I'm not saying we should do nothing, but, you know, you get the money. People aren't going to just disappear. People are paying in, and we can pay 70%. But what you do is there's all sorts of lists around Washington, D.C. of small changes that we have to address. They're going to be difficult, and members of Congress are going to have to make these difficult decisions. But what you have been so good about pointing out is that this is a debate about whether we keep the traditional system and fix it, or we have personal accounts and the system is disabled. So, I mean, you're right on the track, and just keep doing these programs.
Well, I'm doing my best, and you're definitely right on the track, and thank you very much for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to come here on the Inside Scoop. I really do appreciate it. That's it for today's show. Tomorrow we've got one more show. I'm going to talk about the Constitution. Well, it's my favorite document. I think it's the one document that sort of holds us all together as Americans. And it seems to me that you got a lot of right-wing conservatives that tell you how much they revere the Constitution as they work to disable it, to destroy it, to take it apart piece by piece, whether we're talking about judicial nominees or equal protection under the law or the Bill of Rights, the thing that prevents us from being swept up by the government, spied on, and held in prison forever without a lawyer or a trial. It seems that every instance, the conservatives are spitting on our Constitution. And I have to say, I think the United States Constitution is the only thing left that's protecting the American people from really all-out tyranny. We still have the Constitution. I want to talk about that in detail, and I hope you'll call him then. And then, as I mentioned on the phone, talking to Barbara Cannelli, I will be away for a week. Radio listeners will be hearing reruns, but those of you on the Internet will just have to wait until Sunday, April 10th, because I'm going to be in Colorado at a panel on the World Conference of International Affairs. If you live in Colorado or nearby, I hope you'll check out the panel. There's some really interesting things going on. I'll be back Sunday, April 10th with my show on the Sunday Weekly Review at 1 p.m. And later that evening, I'll be broadcasting my appearance on Air America at 9 that evening talking about the World Conference. So that's it for today's Insight.